Alright, we're beginning on the top of Membed, I'm an Aleph, 12 lines down. The Gemara here is continuing the discussion of the Machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Yesterday we saw the Machloket between them when Avodah Zarah Nishtabra Me'aleha, if Avodah Zarah that collapses by itself or breaks by itself, where Rish Lakish said then it is Mutar, because we assume that the individual will be Mevatelet, or was Mevatelet, even in a case where we don't know that, the assumption is that something that's broken is just not functioning as a Avodah Zarah. And then we had Rabbi Yochanan who believed that if it's broken by itself, it's still a problem because Ein Safek in essence Motzi Midei Vadai. Even if we know Vadai it was worshipped, then you can't have a Safek here as whether it was or was not Mivutal, be Mivatel, the fact that it was a Avodah Zarah, because we don't have enough information to make that determination. It's for certain that it was Mivutal. So then we had the question from Dagon, with regards to how could it be that they continued to worship it after it was broken. And Rish Lakish gave his explanation of the Gemara there with regards to the Miftan. Then we spoke about our Mishnah and the proof from our Mishnah that seemingly was against Rish Lakish. Then Rish Lakish's explanation that led Rabbi Yochanan to respond and say there's a difference between Slamim and Avodah Zarah. And then the Gemara said, or tested this idea of whether Ein Safik Motzi Midei Vadai. Again, the Baal Tosfot noted that Ein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai is not just a question out of the blue. Oh, maybe Safek should be Motzi Midei Vadai. It's talking about a Safek Ragil, which is something where we know for a high likelihood something happened. Is that Safek sufficient to undermine a Vadai? In this case, in all likelihood, someone was Mivatelet, and that's why it should be a Mutar. We don't have 100% certainty. In that type of Safek, can you really say Ein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai? And we brought other instances which seemed to indicate that the Safek was Motzi Midei Vadai. In both of those instances, we either said it was a Safek Motzi Midei Safek, or Vadai Motzi Midei Vadai. So that's how we entered the Gemara. And now the Gemara continues asking questions. Etevei, Matza Tavnit Yad, Tavnit Regel, Arelu Surim, Ipnei Shekiyot Zbem Ne'avad. So again, the latter half of our Mishnah, which is if you find an image of a hand or an image of a foot, again, going back to what we saw yesterday, those are the exception to the rule. When we found pieces, then we assumed that everything was fine, that Shvarim were totally okay. But the exception to that rule is Yad and Regel. Amai, Hai Shvarim Ninhu. These are just pieces, broken pieces. Atargama Shmuel, Bomdim Abisisan. Now this isn't just your average piece that is broken off. This is something that has significance to it. Again, the Machloket Rashi and the Baal Tosafot. Rashi, based on what he says earlier in the Masechta, seems to indicate that it means a Bimus, which means that it's placed on an altar of sorts or something where people worship it. The Baal Tosafot said that it was attached to a pedestal and it doesn't look broken. It looks like this is the whole image that was on there and they worship the actual hand or the foot. And you can see, if you look up online, you can see pictures of these items where they'll have a hand or something dedicated to Zeus, where you'll have a huge hand and then the idol carved into the hand or the finger of the hand. So they had these types of Avodah Zarah that existed in their time. And that's the problem over here. So here you can't make any determination of, okay, it broke by itself, Rish Lakish. How come there's a problem over here? Here there's a lot more to the story besides just the Yad and the Regel that are there. They are found in a circumstance, according to Baal Tosafot, that has evidence indicating that the pedestal shows you that these were made in this way and they are still Avodah Zarah and they're not broken. As for Rashi, their placement in a certain location makes it that people obviously have not given up worshipping these items because they are on the bimus. Etevei, ove kochavim, mevatel avodat kochavim shelo v'shel chaveiro. Person who worships Avodah Zarah, meaning a non-Jew who engages in that activity, he can annul the Avodah Zarah of his own Avodah Zarah and his friend's Avodah Zarah. That means that even if he's not a worshipper of that particular Avodah Zarah, he can still annul his friend's Avodah Zarah, which is dedicated to some other Avodah Zarah. Israel, Einu mevatel avodat kochavim shelovid kochavim. A Jew does not have the capacity or the ability to mevatel the avodah zarah when oved kochavim. This we discussed yesterday. Amai, tavi avodat kochavim shenishtabra me'aleha. A Jew breaking it should be no different than it happening by itself. If happening by itself results or lands you with the situation where we assume the goy is mevatelet, so then why can't we just look at the Jew breaking it or annulling it being just nishtabru me'aleha, as if it broke by itself? So Amar Abaye shepachsa. It was a case where the Jew crushed it. He did not break it. He simply compressed it down. So it was a metallic idol of some sort. And instead of taking it apart, crushing it, breaking it, He simply smushed it downward and put pressure on it. So the item is intact. You could reconstruct it by simply extending the metal again. It's like equivalent of someone who sits on a hat. You can still get the hat back up by pushing out the pieces. It comes back together. What does it make a difference then if he used paksa? Batnan, paksa, afu pishlo chisra, bitla. That in a case where he crushes it, he smushes it, even if there's nothing missing from the object itself, bitla. The goy is assumed to have annulled the avodah zarah in that case. So Gemara says, hani milei de paksa uve kochavim. That's when a non-Jew does it. Ava paksa Yisrael, lo bitla. On the other hand, if it's a Jew who does it, that would not result in him annulling the avodah zarah. And Rashi over here explains that the difference being that if the non-Jew does it, then he's galadate, that he's mivazeh it. The fact that he's treating it in this way is clearly an indication that he doesn't believe that this is an avodah zarah, because he's doing things to it that you wouldn't expect if he really venerated the item. Then when the Jew does it, it's like as if he's turning the other cheek, the avodah zarah. When the Jew comes and just crushes it, he's not destroying the avodah zarah, he's not taking anything away from it. So the non-Jew thinks that this is just a avodah zarah that turns the other cheek when someone comes and smushes him, and he'll just pop it back up, and it'll be avodah zarah again. So he doesn't see in that any diminishment in the power of the avodah zarah. And for that reason, when a Jew does it, it's not considered to be an annulment of it. Rav Amar, Lolam ki paksa Yisrael nami bitla, that even when a Jew does it, there is bitul when it comes to paksa. Ela gzeira dilma magvala v'hadar mevatala. The problem we have is that the Jew first picks it up and then is mevatalit. So the truth is that whether it's a Jew or a non-Jew, if they crush it, then we will assume that the avodah zarah is vitela. So then why can't a Jew be mevatel in this way? What are we worried about in these situations? Is that the Jew might pick up the avodah zarah and then only after picking it up, be mevatelit. So now you run into a problem, which is, once it comes into the possession of the Jew, that is a serious issue. Rabbi Ovadat Kochavim Biyad Yisrael. Kol Ovadat Kochavim Biyad Yisrael, Eina B'teila De'odam. Once it's the hand of the Jew, then there is no possibility of being Mivatelet, because it becomes the Jew's Avodah Zarah. Here, Rashi seems to indicate that that is an issue Mida Oraita, that the Jew doesn't have the capacity to eliminate or wipe out the avodah zarah. As Rashi says over here, in la b'teila olamit, bitunat geniza, definan, in the next perek, mi b'sam b'seter. So Rashi sees this as a Torah prescribed result of you making a kinyan on the item, is that you have no ability to be mevatel it, but you have an obligation to put it in geniza and to deal with the avodah zarah. So according to Rashi, mina Torah, there are two problems. One is, if a Jew owns avodah zarah of a goy, and there's also a problem of a Jew who worshipped the avodah zarah, which is avodah zarah to Israel. Both of those will be problematic. Whereas the Smag sees this simply as being a gzera otu, which is that avodah zarah shel Israel cannot be mibutal. Therefore, we also don't allow an Israel to be mibatal al avodah zarah because of the fear that if he makes a kinyan on it, that would then become problematic, not midoraita, but midorabanan, because even though it's not avodah zarah of Israel, no Jew worshipped it, but just it's coming into the possession of the Israel is problematic. Because according to the Smag, there's only one problem midoraita, and that's avodah zarah that was worshipped by a Jew. Avodah zarah that comes into the possession of a Jew, the Chachamim made asur, because of the problems of avodah zarah of Israel, where he did worship it. So they made it that if he owns it, even though it was worshipped by a non-Jew, it will take on that same status, so that people don't get confused about the Zarah de Israel. So that's a machloket Rashi and the Smag as to how we view the Jews' inability to be mevatel the avodah zarah of the Oved Kochavim. So the Rabbanim or Gazur, the Chol Bit Israel, La Bitul. So anytime a Jew is mevatel it, it doesn't work. Zera Dilma Mikbal, La Bikoni La Be'akbah. The fear that they might pick it up, and then that Akbah, the Chol Davar Hefker, Kagon mitziah niknet behagba'ah. Anything that's hefker, including a mitziah, if you pick it up, it automatically comes into your possession. So that is a problem sometimes when you find something out on the street. And if you pick it up, and then it becomes yours, now there's an obligation to return the item. You have an obligation to do hashavat aveda. So many times it's worth being careful that when you find an aveda, that you're not going to be able to find its owners. It's very difficult to find the owners. You're just going to move it from the sidewalk, the street, onto the side so somebody could find it when they come by. that maybe it's worthwhile having in mind that you're not being koneh the item, so then you don't become obligated in the Hashavat Aveda, but that you can place it on the side and benefit the person. Sometimes the Gemara does say that that's the best way to get it back to them when you put it on the side. Depends on the circumstances, so to avoid problems, sometimes it's worthwhile having in mind not to be koneh the Avodah Zarah because of the responsibilities that come with koneh the Aveda, because of the responsibilities that come along with it. So similarly over here, they're assuming that your picking up of the Avodah Zarah automatically will bring it into your possession. And then, once it's in your possession, we're done, because you can't be Mevatel Avodah Zarah of Israel. Now, most of the Rishonim are perplexed by this, because Avodah Zarah is an Isur Hana'ah. Isur Hana'ah means that there's no value, there's no underlying monetary worth to this item, because you can't do anything with it. You can't eat it, you can't benefit from it, can't do anything with it. So why should there be any kinyan over here? Kinyan supposes that you're taking possession of something that has at least some underlying value or something intrinsic value to it. But a zarah does not have that value. So how here is it coming into your possession if it's an isur hana'ah? So one way to deal with the problem is the way the Gemara deals with the problem with chametz on Pesach, which is that even though you're right, it is isur hana'ah, the Torah nevertheless puts it into your possession, make you responsible for it, and to punish you if it is in your possession. Yes, it's a surbana. Yes, there's a problem with making a kinyan on it, but sometimes the Torah puts it in your possession because it says if you're going to take possession of this, then you're going to be punished for it. Just like chametz and pesach is a surbana, and you can't make a kinyan on it. Nevertheless, the Torah put it in your possession to make you chayav for it. Similarly over here, by Avodah Zarah, you're going to say the same thing, that the Torah puts it in your possession to make you responsible for it. The other way to view it is that simply your being responsible for it makes it yours, which is that once it comes into your possession and now you're responsible to deal with it, that means whether you have to destroy it, whether that means it belongs to the goy and the goy is expecting to get it back from you, that responsibility in itself is enough of a problem that now you're going to be chayav for having it in your possession and it becomes yours. We have a similar idea with regards to chametz as well in Pesach, which is that when you are a shomer of the goy's chametz, if you have certain levels of responsibility towards that chametz, then it becomes yours or deemed as if it is yours because of the responsibilities that you have vis-a-vis the chametz. Similarly over here with regards to Avodah Zarah, we would say the same thing, that in this case, it will be your responsibility. That is the view of the Magen Avraham, and that means that even if it isn't hefker, the responsibility deems it as if it is the Jew's item or property, and then you run into this problems. That means even if the goy still owns it, but you found it, then that responsibility now makes it that it is deemed to be the Avodah Zarah of the Jew. That argues on the Bach, who says that we take very literally over here what Rashi seems to indicate from the Gemara, which is that only if you find it from hefker is it problematic. Because in that way, the Jew takes possession of the item, and then it's an issue. If it remains in the possession of the goy, even if the Jew gets some responsibility with it, that is not a problem. And therefore, the Bach believes the issue only exists when you pick it up from hefker, not if you pick up an item in the street. And the Ran offers an interesting explanation over here, which is that the fact that the goy could be mevatel the Avodah Zarah means that this object does have value, because if the goy was mevatel it, it would have had inherent value to it. That means when you pick it up, you're actually picking up something that has the possibility of inherent value, and that gives it value to allow you to make the kinyan over here.
Akom shevi avanim min amarkulis,
a non-Jew who brings stones from the Markulis. They worship the Markulis was generally at forks in the road. They used to stack up stones in a triangular pyramid where they had two stones on the bottom, one stone on top of it. And then the worshiping of the Avodah Zarah is that you threw a rock at it or tossed a stone at it on your way by. And so then they collected all these stones around the Markulis, and they're all problematic, both because the Markulis itself is Avodah Zarah, and then the stones thrown at it are to grow a bit of Avodah Zarah. So they're all problematic Avodah Zarah. But here the Akum decides he wants to pave the street. He went ahead and he paved the road with those stones. Or he used them in the theaters. Seems to be a little bit strange, the Lashon of Tartat Diot, what it was exactly doing with it in the theater, if he made it for the stage. I don't know what he did with the stones there. There is an alternate girsa that I saw, which is Sartiot, which would make more sense, which means that's like a main highway or a main thoroughfare. So it would be Drachim and Sartiot. That would probably make more sense over here. Mutarot. In those cases, they're totally fine. The goy can be mevatelet, and by definition, he's being mevatelet when he puts it in as the stones that he lays for the road. Bisrael shevi avanim min amarkulis v'chipa ben drachim. Then the Jew brings the stones from the markulus and then paves the road with them. V'tartiot, and the theaters of the sartiot asurot, they are problematic because the Jew can't be mevatel the markulus. Amai te'avi kaburat kochavim shnishkabra me'eleha. The Jew, when he takes the Markulis apart and he uses it to pave the road, that mere disassembling of the Markulis should be enough to be considered as if he is breaking it or nishtabrume eleha. Achanami, the Gemara here answers, kidarova. The same problem that we had before with regards to Rava, that we're fearful of him picking it up first and then only being mevatalit after the fact. And then that'll cause a problem, which he can't be mevatalit anymore. Be one thing if he broke it, and then it would be nishtabu me'ala, and it'd be fine, and then he went ahead and used it, that would work. The problem is that he might lift it first, and then break it afterwards, and that'll cause a problem. The way Rashi describes it over here, Tilma mikbol ala kula makulus bereisha, v'adam mevatel lev sotrol. So Rashi says the fear is that he might pick up the entire makulus, meaning that the pyramidic stones that are there, he might lift them up altogether, and keep the avodah zarah intact, because otherwise, if it's made up of three stones, two on the bottom, one on top, and he just pulls one off the top, by picking it up, he's already destroyed the Markulis. So Rashi describes that the problem is that he lifts the whole Markulis in one shot, and that causes the problem over here. The Tosafot read says that seems far-fetched, because how many times can he pick it up? He just needs the stones, he'll pick them up one at a time. So he says that it's really a low plug issue, which is, once the Chachamim goes there, that Israel can't be mevatel the Avodah Zarah, he can't take the Avodah Zarah, that's irrespective of how he picks it up or what he picks up. So in most cases, he'll end up picking up the whole Avodah Zarah, and that's what we're worried about. In this case, where that's not plausible, nevertheless, it's still a sur because of low plug, that in all cases of Avodah Zarah, we don't let you engage with the Avodah Zarah and be mevatel the Avodah Zarah. Eitavei, ovei kochavim, shishipa, avodat kochavim letzorcho, he vishipuea mutarim. If an ovei kochavim comes and shaves down planes and avodah zarah, so he gets shavings or chips off the avodah zarah, but he's doing it for his own purpose. He needs some kindling, he needs some wood or whatever metal or whatever he's doing to destroy the avodah zarah in some way that he's cutting it, planing it, sanding it down. So then he ends up with pieces plus the original avodah zarah. If he's doing it for his own purposes, then there's no question that it is mevutal. The fact that he's willing to take pieces of the Avodah Zarah and throw them in the fire or use them for his own purposes, that means that he's clearly mevatel the Avodah Zarah. He's doing this, even the pieces that come up, but even the Avodah Zarah that's left behind is mevutal because he has no veneration for this Avodah Zarah. He's willing to take pieces off of it to sand it down, to plane it, whatever that he wants to do with it. And then the Tzorcha, if he does it for the purpose of the Avodah Zarah itself, he asura v'shipuya mutarim. If he does it to fix the Avodah Zarah, there's some sort of protrusion, there's something wrong with it, it needs to be reshaped, whatever it is, trimmed down, whatever it is that he needs to do to it, then the pieces that come off of it are mutarim, because he's claiming if I tell them, he has no interest in the pieces that are coming off, but with regards to the actual item itself, that remains Avodah Zarah. It's clearly not mevatel that piece. V'Yisrael shishipa avodat kochavim, ben letzorcho, ben letzorcha, he v'shipuah asurim. Again here, if the Jew does it, it doesn't work. Doesn't matter if the Jew's doing it for his own purposes, which is that he wants the firewood or whatever he's doing to destroy it, whether he's clearly mevatel it and destroying it, or whether he's doing it for the benefit of the Avodah Zarah itself. In either case, both the Avodah Zarah and the chips or the shavings, the plane that comes off of it, are problematic. Amai? Why should this be any worse than a piece of the Avodah Zarah breaking off by itself? So to over here, pieces that the Jew shaves off or cuts off should be by definition mivutal, because they're just as if it broke by itself. The fact that a Jew did it versus it happening by itself, why should there be any difference? So now the Avodah Zarah itself, not necessarily, but the pieces that came off of it should be considered nishtabru me'eleha. My answer is here, achanami kidurava. So too over here, we'll answer like Rava, that we're worried about the Jew picking it up, and that will cause problems over here. And as Tosafot pointed out over here, from the fact that Reish Lakish doesn't answer Ikaro Kayam, shows you that Reish Lakish believes that even in cases the Ikaro Kayam, that it's still Mibutal, the Avodah Zarah, or at least the pieces that were taken off, as long as it's low, Derech Delata. as long as it's not the normal way of this item to grow and to shed whatever item it is. So now, the Baalei Tosafot asks a basic question, which is something that we're going to see over and over again. Hachanami kidrava. So far, we've already answered the question twice and said the same thing, that the same answer each time is like Rava. He says, Sarachiyun, b'cho'ani, udakarila, maikarila. Why is the Gemara keep asking questions? It knows the answer. It knows the answer is like Rava. You don't need to ask questions anymore, because we have an answer that Rava will tell you in all these situations, the problem with the Jew doing it is not because nishtabru me'eleha is asur, but rather because the Jew doing it, we have either a gzeira otu, or according to Rashi, the possibility that you took possession of the item, and that would cause a problem of avodah zarah of Israel, which would be a doraita problem. So then, pshita, delishne behu, kidrava. Then in each instance, we're going to answer like Rava. So that brings up more of a literary or stylistic question about the Gemara, which is when you have these types of situations, what really happened? Were these questions really asked by Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish? And then each time Reish Lakish is coming up with an answer, obviously Rava lived after Reish Lakish, so he's not giving the answer of Rava, but Rava's explaining what Reish Lakish responded in those situations. Or is the Gemara now embodying these Amoraim, and basically acting as if these Amoraim are speaking, but it's really the Gemara that's speaking. So then, depending on how you think the Gemara is laid out, you'll give different answers over here. You could answer Tosafot's question by simply saying that Rabbi Yochanan posed all these questions to Reish Lakish, and then the Gemara here just brings them down one by one, and in each case says that's like Rava, but that was Rabbi Yochanan posed them all to Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish gave one answer to them. The same answer for all these questions. And then Gemara just divides them up because it has to present you all the questions. So that's if you assume that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking to Reish Lakish. If you assume that it's the Gemara impersonating Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and saying, well, based on their shita, how do we deal with these situations? Or this is the question Rabbi Yochanan could have answered, and this is the way Reish Lakish could have answered. Then you could say that either of these were presented at different times. These were questions raised by the Gemara at different times. They're consolidated here. Doesn't mean it happened all at once. Or even if it happened all at once, the Gemara is just laying out how we would have dealt with all of these issues. So it is not as difficult as Tosafot makes it to seem, because there is a stylistic reason to do this, and the consolidation of all the questions into one area. The truth is that it could have been one question and one answer. Could have been different time periods when that happened, but they consolidated it into one place, and that would explain this, because otherwise what Tosafot is pointing out is that at a certain point, the logic should be obvious. And if once you know, or once you're given the tools of logic, you don't need to keep asking the same question and giving the same answer. The answer is going to be the same, and you know the answer. We've already given you the capacity to answer that question. And so that's the way that Tosafot asked the question. Again, the other Rishonim respond by saying that this is a stylistic or a issue that the Gemara has in terms of its style and not a logical question on the Gemara. So here we'll see a number of other questions like this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, shochek v'zoreh laruach. That you have to crush it, you have to pulverize it, and then throw it to the wind. Oh, matil yam. Or then you disperse it, distribute it into the water. Amrulo, afhi naseh zevel. That's not good enough, because that makes it into something that will be fertilizer. Bichtiv, and the pasuk says, lo yidbak biyadcha miuma min acherim, that you're not going to have any remaining hana'a, any residual benefit from the avodah zarah. So here you have the question that you ask, does destroying the avodah zarah get rid of the avodah zarah? The answer is no, because destroying the avodah zarah still leaves it in a situation or circumstance where someone can get benefit from it. If it is metallic in nature, if you only crush it or you only break it, someone can take the pieces and get benefit from reheating and using those pieces of metal. If you pulverize it or you destroy it in such a way where it's no longer usable, you can't reconstruct anything from it. Nevertheless, what the Gemara points out is that that could be good fertilizer. That could be something that is beneficial just because of the mineral or metal contents of it could be good for using as fertilizer, especially if you add it to water and then it's put in water. If you water the fields with that water that contains those extra metals or minerals in it, that actually be beneficial to the fields. So now you have a problem of how to dispose of what is around in a way that it cannot be benefited from. That's the claim of the Chachamim against Rabbi Yossi's suggestion that that's how you get rid of the Avodah Zarah. So am I, Te'avi Kovodat Kochavim Shinish Dabra Me'eleha. At that point, it should be the equivalent of Avodah Zarah that was broken by itself, and it should be Mivutal. Once it's Mivutal, then you can use it, and you can actually get Hana from it. Hachanami,
Kidderoba.
The same answer that we gave before, that it's a problem of the Yisrael possibly picking it up before he destroys it. So now we have another bright. The Rabbi Yossi ben Yassian Omer, Matzat Surat Darkon. If he finds an image, here you have a machloket in the Rishonim. It's going to actually come up in our next Mishnah on Amud Bet about a darakon. What is a darakon? So some just say it's a nachash. It is a snake. There are others who say that it is a very large snake, or I would term it as a serpent of sorts. And then there's still others, and this does make a lot of sense, that say that it is a snake that has wings and breathes fire out of its mouth, or otherwise a dragon. The reason that makes a lot of sense is because the signature of many of the Roman legions on their flags, that was a dragon. And that's why the dragon takes on such significance here in the Gemara, because it was a symbol of the Roman legions, and it was something that was a symbol of Avodah Zarah. And that's why the Gemara speaks about it so prominently. It's because it was something that they dealt with on a regular basis. So here you have something with a tzuret darakon, brosho chatuch, but the head of the snake, serpent, dragon is cut off. Safek obeid kochavim chatucho, safek Yisrael chatucho. We don't know who cut off the head. Was it a non-Jew who cut off the head? Or was it a Jew that cut off the head? Mutar. Then for sure it's okay. Vadai Yisrael chatucho. And then if we know for sure it was a Jew that cut off the head, asur, then it's problematic. Again, amai, tehavi kebudat kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. Let it be like a Avodah Zarah, that it's destroyed by itself. Hachanami kidarova. Again here, the answer is like Rava, that we're worried about Yisrael picking it up before he destroys it, before he cuts off the head. Rashi over here explains the reason that safek Yisrael chatocho is mutar is because talinan boveit kochavim. Das sfek sfekohu, b'shema lo ne'avad me'olam. This is definitely a sfek sfeka, because maybe the item was never worshipped at all. Now, given that, why would Rabbi Yochanan then disagree in this case? Because yesterday we saw that when it comes to a sfek sfeka, even Rabbi Yochanan agrees in that case that it's mutar. For instance, in the Mishnah, when you dealt with Slamim, in the Mishnah, over there we had sfek nevad, sfek lo nevad. We didn't know whether they worshipped it or not. Then we had a sfek, whether after they worshipped it, were they mevatel it. And that's fake sfeika, Rashi told us, with regards to the Mishnah. Even Rabbi Yochanan is matir in those cases, because you have this double-level sfeik. The reason Rabbi Yochanan doesn't matir, nishtabru me'elah, is because you have vadai avodah zarah, and then you have a sfeik as to whether it was mevutal or not mevutal afterwards. That's what he says, ain't sfeik mutzi midei vadai. And that's why nishtabru me'elah is problematic, because there you have vadai avodah zarah, sfeik as to whether he was mevatel it or not mevatel it. And that's the Baya Tosafot's question. In a case where the Jew definitely cut it off, why in that case is that not enough of a sfek sfeka, like by the tzlamim, to say that it is fine? Something that we mentioned in the Baya Tosafot yesterday, which is when it comes to tzlamim, the likelihood of who destroyed it, we would attribute that to a non-Jew versus a Jew. Because if Yisrael was the one who broke it, he would have eliminated it from the world. The fact that you still have it around is an indication it was broken by a non-Jew, not broken by a Jew. And even if it breaks by itself, it's more likely that some non-Jew passed by her and was mevatel it than was the fact that a Jew did it. Tosafot mentioned this yesterday, that there was a higher percentage chance that either it broke by itself, was destroyed by an Oved Kochavim, versus the chance that Yisrael was the one who was mevatel it and had no effect over here. Given that, the Sveik Sveika makes it that it is mutar. For that reason, you have two reasons to be matir. One reason is the fact that it could have been a non-Jew that was mevatel, broke it. And number two is, even if it happened by itself, maybe a non-Jew already passed by and was mevatel it. Aval, kishachatcho Yisrael, when a Jew cuts it, lekel achat time al heteira. Over there, there's only one reason to be matir. Sheshamar, shema kashim tzeno ove kochavim chatucha yivatlena. That maybe when the non-Jew comes across it, he will be mevatelet. Even if it's a case where it's a fake nevad. What the Baal Tosafot point out is that if the reason by the fact that we don't know whether it's a Jew or a non-Jew, the reason it's mutar is because it's fake sveka. That's what Rashi says. Safek ne'avad. We don't know if it was worship. And even if it was worshipped, maybe the goy was mevatel it and not a Jew. Sfek sveka. Then even in a case where it's a Jew that cuts it off, you still have a sfek sveka that exists. Which is safek ne'avad. We don't know if it was worship. And even after the Jew destroyed it, maybe a goy walked by and was mevatel it. You have a sfek sveka as well. And Rabbi Yochanan and sfek sveka is matir. So why over here did the Braita suggest that that should be asur? The Baal Tosfot say there are different types of sfek svekot. Is a sfek sveka like by the Tzlamim, where the overwhelming majority of outcomes is a case where it's mivutal, which means either the goy himself destroyed it, or it was destroyed and the goy saw it and was mevatel it, versus a small minority that would have been a Jew destroying it and leaving it there, because he would have eliminated it completely. On the other hand, in our case of here, where the Jew himself cut it, and we know he cut it up, and he destroyed it, there you're left. Yes, you have a sfek sveka, but it's a much narrower sfek sveka. Because in this case, you only have one opportunity that will work, which is that maybe a goy passed by, and was mevatel it. If that happens, then yes, you're right, it would have worked. But then you have this other possibility, is that no goy passed by, or no goy was mevatel it. And since the Jew cut it, we know for sure another goy didn't cut it. If another goy didn't cut it, you've eliminated a whole percentage of possibilities of what would have made it mebutal, and therefore it's not a strong enough sfek sveka. So here the Baal Tosfot introduced this idea that sfek sveka are not universal. You have sfek svekot where there's a high likelihood that the sfek sveka is correct, and therefore we are considered it to be mebutal, and it can eliminate the problem. Whereas you have a sfek sveka where, because of the circumstance, the information we know, you've now narrowed the possibility of this being a sfek sveka, and that's enough to say that it will not eliminate the problem. And he creates these two levels of sfek sveka, in which one of them, Rabbi Yochanan will say, is mutar, and the other one he will say that it is asur. Right, now the next case, etevei. Rabbi Yossi omer, af lo yirakot bimot hagshamim. You're not allowed to plant vegetation under an ashera in the wintertime. Even the Chachamim or the Tanakhama agrees that you can't do it in the summertime, because vegetables or vegetation, they believe, needed shade, and the shade is good for it. So in the summertime, if you plant them under the Asherah tree, the Asherah is providing the shade that is beneficial to the Yerakot, you're benefiting from an Asherah. That doesn't work. In the wintertime, where you don't need the shading of the tree, plus the trees are more bare in the wintertime, so in that case, the Tanakhama and the Chachamim believe you can plant under the Asherah because you're getting no benefit from the Asherah. Rabbi Yossi responds to that and says you cannot plant under the Asherah, even bimot hagshamim, b'mnesha nibya nosheret aleihem. Because the debris of the tree, the leaves fall off the tree, and then they fertilize or help the yirakot that are down below. So you're a benefit from the asherah, the mulching, or the tree shedding its leaves onto the yirakot will give you benefit. Amai. Once again, why don't you just say this is a avodah zarah that fell apart by itself, and then he's mevatel it. Shani otam, over there it's different. The ikar avodat kochavim kayemet. The main avodah zarah is still intact. Hayilan lo batel, hilkach nibiya nosher v'meno asura. The tree still remains intact, and that which it sheds, and therefore they don't see any diminishment in the power of the avodah zarah, with the leaves shedding, because that was to be expected. That's what they knew would happen to the tree. And since the tree's intact and it's doing something that's only natural, then that's not a bitul me'eleha of the avodah zarah. And when the ikar is kayam, that either means that the goy gives reverence to the items that fall off of it because the ikar is still around, or it's just a gezerah that we don't allow you to get hanah from the things that fall off the avodah zarah, because you might come to get hanah from the ikar itself. You won't differentiate between the two. Veha shipuyan de ikar vodat kochavim kayemet. What about the case where you planed the avodah zarah, or you shaved down the avodah zarah? Biktani letzorcha hi asura b'shipuya mutarim. If you did it for the benefit of the avodah zarah itself is asur, because you are doing it for the benefit of the avodah zarah, but the shavings or the chips that came off of it, those would be mutarim. Here you have a case where the core of avodah zarah is intact, and we're saying that pieces that broke away from it are considered to be mutarim. So why should that be any different? And the Baal Tosfot right away, Tema, my kaporich. He says, what are you talking about? Dilma shani otam, the shipa ovein kuchavim, o lahachi shari, v'yapa ikar avodat kuchavim kayemet. And over there, it's very different. There, someone's taking an action to shave it down or to cut it down. Avalacha, the shipa Yisrael, o nishtabra me'eleha. In a case where it falls apart by itself, or a Jew does it, when the original or core avodah zarah is intact. You're dealing with a very different situation. By the leaves of the tree, they're just falling off by themselves. Nobody took action to do anything. Over here, the Avodah Kochavim is actively engaging with the Avodah Zarah, shaving it off, cutting off the pieces that he doesn't want. That's clearly almost a active bittul of the pieces that he doesn't need anymore. So that's why you would differentiate. And we see that in the case where the Jew does it, falls off by itself, it still remains a sore. Says, V'yesh lomar d'hochi parach. V'ashipiyan d'ikor b'da kochavim kayemet. The question is about the Ikar Bar Zerah being intact. V'ktani v'shipa obey kochavim d'mutarim. V'afilo shipa yisrael nami avishari ilav zera d'rova. K'dishani reish l'min malakish. So the Gemara really is challenging this idea that the Ikar Bar Zerah being intact allows you then to say that the pieces that come off of it are asurim or problematic. Gemara challenges that and says, wait, let's look at Shipuyin. By Shipuyin, we don't say that. And even when Yisrael does it, we say the only problem is a gzera because of Rova. In Ochanami, they would have been mutarim. It would have been the equivalent of a bitul according to Reish Lakish. But nevertheless, we are gozer otu Rova. Well, that means that you really think when the Ikar Bar Zerah is intact, that the pieces that come off of it are mutarim. The Gemara's challenge is deeper than just simply saying, oh, here, you have a piece falling off an ikar, that should be mutar. It's saying that certain circumstances where it's not clear that there's bittul, for instance, where it fell off by itself, or cases where the Jew cut it off, there Reish Lakish says the only reason it's a sore is because of Rava. But otherwise it would have been completely mutar. So Amar Ravuna b'rei de Rav Yeshua, Amar lefi she'enu b'da kochavim b'teila derech delata. And this is what I noted before, which is there's a big difference between something shedding in a natural way versus a piece falling off in a avodah zarah, where that's not the natural way for it to happen. That means that when the piece falls off, it's mibutal because we don't expect that to happen to the avodah zarah. If it happens, then they're definitely mibatelet. We have gzeira atu Israel doing it in those situations. But otherwise, of course, when it falls off by itself and that's not a natural process, that's the equivalent of bitul happening. So Reish Lakish now poses questions towards Rabbi Yochanan. These questions were all asked by Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which is that all these cases seem to imply that even when a Jew does something or engages in the Avodah Zarah, that should have been deemed Ishtabru Be'eleha. Why don't we say that in all these cases? The answer was Mipnei Rava. Rava was the reason in all these cases. Now Reish Lakish poses a question to Rabbi Yochanan. Kain Shibarosha Ilan Shel Ekdesh. If you have a bird's nest that is on the top of a tree that belongs to Ekdesh, lo nehenin velo mo'alin. You're not allowed to get benefit from it, but you're also not chayav for mi'ilah if you do get benefit from it. That's usually a tag that tells you it's not a sur midoraita, but it is a sur midrabanan. And the problem, as Rashi notes over here, is the fact that you might climb up on the tree. And in climbing up on the tree, that would really be getting direct benefit from Hekdesh. So in order to avoid you coming into benefiting from the Hekdesh directly, we don't allow you to take the nest off the top of the tree, which would most likely require you to scramble up the tree or climb the tree in order to get it. So then in order to prevent that, we say don't take the nest. And then if it's at the top of a Avodah Zarah tree, yatiz bikaneh, then you can poke it off with a stick. Rashi says the difference between Avodah Zarah and Hekdesh is bedila mineh. People separate themselves from it. It's ma'us. It's disgusting to them. When you do with Avodah Zarah, we're not worried about him climbing up in the tree because he doesn't want to come to contact with the Avodah Zarah. He stays far away from Avodah Zarah. So over there, we give him the dispensation to knock it off with a stick and to take it down. We don't let you take it off with your hand directly, either because we're afraid if you take it off with your hand directly, you're also going to snap a branch off with it and take a branch, or because of Maradayin, that others are going to see you taking it off and thinking that you're taking branches from the tree. And you can see that in the Bali Tosavot that say that v'nira d'davka nakat yatiz b'kaneh, v'fil yecholit lo biyado, b'lo aliyah, ala sherah sur, k'desh liyomru akshavu shovro min asherah. So even though it's within reachable distance, and you don't need the stick to get it down, and there's no chashash of climbing on the tree, there's still a problem because it might look like you're snapping off the branches from the tree. So therefore, we tell you, use a stick to take it off. Don't do it directly, but we do permit you to take it off the tree. The assumption of what the nest is made of in this tree could go, Shishibra mimena itzim v'kinta ben. The bird broke off twigs or branches from this tree, whether it was a Hekdesh tree or an Asherah tree, and then built its nest of the pieces of the tree that it broke off. So now we have pieces of a tree that are now being used to make the nest of the bird. And it says over there that you can get benefit from it. That's a proof to Reish Lakish's position. If If it broke by itself, then it's mibutal. So we have the birds doing the breaking, which is the equivalent of it being done by itself. And the Braita says you can take benefit from the nest. You can take that nest and then use it as kindling, use it as firewood. You can do whatever you want with it. Wait, it came from the branches of an Asherah. Came from the branches of an Avodah Zarah. Why is it batel, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if it all happened by itself? By itself here means with the bird doing it, but there's no human involvement. I says, Achamai Skinan, Rabbi Yochanan can answer a different way. You're going to ITC Mi'alma, Vikintaben. The branches, or the nest, was not built of the branches of the Asherah. It was built from wood or other pieces that it collected from other places. It brought them there. It just made its nest in that tree, but it didn't make the nest of that tree. Dekanami. That makes sense. Diktoni gabi akdesh, lo nehenin velo moalin. Because by akdesh it says you cannot get enough from it, but there is no mi'ila. Iyamart bishlama da'ayti etzi mi'alma. If you tell me that they're bringing wood or branches, twigs, whatever it is, they're making the nest out from other places. That you can't get a no midrabanan, but there's no isu doraita. That's why it's not a sumi doraita to take that nest of hekdesh. You would have been able to take it. Lo nanin derabanan imposed an isu hana, because we don't want you either climbing the tree, we don't want you taking other branches of the tree. Because the branches that are used in this nest are not kadosh. They were brought from somewhere else. They're a derivative of another tree. If you say that it actually broke the branches off the hekdesh tree, and then made its nest with them, why is that not milah? They are kadosh. They're coming from a tree that's hekdesh. And why would you be able to get benefit from it? It's one thing to say that a avodah zarah is mibutal me'eleha, and that's why you could take the nest on the Asherah tree, even if it's made out of the Asherah. But if you have a nest that's made out of the branches or twigs of the tree that's hekdesh, we don't have any concept of mibutal me'eleha over there. And then that nest should be asur. So it must be you're speaking about a nest that's built from twigs or pieces that are from other trees or other places. They just happen to nest in these trees. Where it says, midiaria. What are you speaking about? Hacha begidulim habayim lachar mikan askinan. By the case of hekdesh, we're speaking about growth on the tree after it was hekdesh. Kasavar and mila begidulim. This is according to the one who believes that when a tree grows after it's been made hekdesh, that which grows afterwards is not subject to the hekdesh of the tree. The core tree, or the tree at the time that you were matishit, that's hekdesh. Anything that grows afterwards is not considered to be hekdesh. Those are gidulei hekdesh. Machloket as to whether gidulei hekdesh have a din of hekdesh or don't have a din of hekdesh. This bright will be according to one who says that gidulei hekdesh are mutar. That would make sense because the gidulim would normally be the softer or smaller twigs, branches that are coming off. So if the bird is to break those off to make his nest, it makes sense that he's taking the gidulim. So that's why by the case of Ekdesh, you can take the nest and get benefit from it, had it not been the Isur Derabanan, because even if he broke it off from the tree of Ekdesh, it's not really Ekdesh, because it's growth and not the core Ekdesh that was there. But by the Asherah, where the growth of the Asherah has the same din as the Asherah itself, the only way the nest could be mutar, if he's breaking off branches from the Asherah, is if it's mubutal me'eleha. So that's why it's a strong proof for Reish Lakish's position that mibutal me'eleha, it should be okay. Again, Rabbi Yochanan answered and said that it's not the case. It's the case that he brought the branches from somewhere else, and that's why it's mutar in these cases. Now, we try to say that the Braita was even duyak like that. Gemara rejects that duyuk and says, Reish Lakish will explain it with the branches themselves. Rabbi Yochanan explain it with branches from somewhere else, and that's how each one of them will deal with this Braita. Rabbi Yavoh Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mayatis. So Rabbi Yochanan says, wait a minute, you don't have to explain this for Rabbi Yochanan and saying that the bird's nest came from somewhere else. Rather, you say yatiz efrochim. Yatiz that you can take out here, it's not taking the nest itself, it's taking the chicks that are inside the nest. So what you're doing yatiz is you're shaking it up or pushing out the chicks to come off the tree so that you can take the chicks for yourself. So those chicks are not considered to be hekdesh. Those chicks are not considered to be part of the Asherah. In Okanami, the nest is problematic, and you cannot take the nest. So then what is he poking off? He's poking off the chicks. And that's what Rashi says over here. Don't give this difficult answer that it's branches that came from somewhere else. You're going to say over here that it's a case where they're dealing with the Efrochim. So the Chiddush of the Braita is that you can't grab them the chicks out by hand. You actually have to use a stick to get them out. Therefore, Reisha Be'itzim. Now Rashi does something that not all Rishonim agree with. He says that there are two different issues in the Braita now. The Reisha, which speaks about Ekdesh, is talking about taking the bird's nest itself. And it's taking the bird's nest itself, because Zavar, Eimi Labi Gidulin, there's no problem with things that grow in Ekdesh. The Galia Hekdesh does Sumi de Rabbanan. And it tells you there that it's a Sumi de Rabbanan by Ekdesh to take the bird's nest, even though it's not Hekdesh, because these are branches that grew after the fact. It's a Sumi de Rabbanan, because we're afraid you're going to climb on the tree. Certainly by Asherah, where there's no heter of Gidulim, there the nest will not only be a Sumi de Rabbanan, the nest will be a Sor Midoraita, like Rabbi Yochanan, that Nishtabru Melah is problematic. But then the Seif of the Bright that comes along and says, Asherah, you can't take the nest, because the nest is clearly problematic, but you can't take the chicks. But the way that you take the chicks has to be doing it with a stick or a staff. And the same would be true by Hekdesh, that you would be allowed to do it. We take that prochim if you poked it with a stick. So each one of the bavot is teaching you something. The first bava is telling you that the nest is problematic. By Hekdesh, it's the Rabbanan. By Asherah, it's the Oraita. The second part of the Braita is telling you that the chicks are okay. And that the chicks are fine both by the Asherah and by Hekdesh, but you just have to take them out with a stick. But then Rashi has a problem, which is, Bahadalo Arvinu. They just put them all together. Put a Shira and Ekdesh in one shot and say, nest is a sewer, and proclaim chicks are fine. Why the Braita separate the two issues out? Shum below causing the mitne lay below ma'alim, be a Shira. That's because the language of lo nani below ma'alim is very particular to Ekdesh. You can't say that by the Ashira. Amrle Rabbi Yaakov, the Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Tachlifa, Sabra locha. It says, I'll explain to you this Braita. When it comes to Ephrochim, when it comes to chicks, kan v'kan mutarim. In both instances, it is mutar. Bebeitzim, with eggs, kan v'kan asurim. In both instances, it is problematic. Amar of Ashi, Rav Ashi just qualifies that and says, Befochim shetzurchim ne'iman, kebeitzim damu. Any chicks that need their mother have the same status as an egg. And the reason that an egg is considered to be problematic is because the egg needs the tree. So Rashi says, since they need the tree, the Chachamim made it that it was as if the beitzim are the tree itself. Or the Balei Tosafot bring another possibility is that the eggs are more risky in terms of knocking them off the tree because they might break. Therefore, there's a higher likelihood the person might climb on the tree, and that's why they were goes there by beitzim more than they were by efruchim. Supposedly the chicks, where they're going to leave. They're going out of the nest. They're not staying in the nest anymore. Well, chicks at some point need to be in the nest. That's exactly what Rav Ashi said. If the chicks still need to be in the nest, they need their mother, then they're no different than beitzim. Now Rashi over here says, both of them will be mutar when you're dealing with the chicks, and both of them will be asur when you're dealing with the eggs. So Rashi sees Rabbi Yaakov's explanation to Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Tachlifa as being basically a continuation of the answer of Rabbi Abou. And he's just explaining you how to fit that Rabbi Abou's answer into the Braita that we brought. And that causes some Rishonim to disagree with Rashi's previous explanation of Rabbi Abou, that there was talking about both Eitzim and Ephrochim, but rather to explain it in the Shita that Rabbi Yaakov brings, which is that the Reish is speaking about Beitzim and the Seifa is speaking about Ephrochim. Although you could have read the answer of Rabbi Abou as applying to both of the issues, which is that Rabbi Abou is saying that both the Hekdesh piece of it and the Asherim piece of it are speaking about Ephrochim. And for the same reason, Rashi before distinguished between the two, which is that by Hekdesh, the lo b'dile minei, the Chachamim said it was asur. And a case by Asherah, where they are b'dile minei, they let it do it a yedei hatazat hakaneh. They're knocking it off with the stick. Whereas the Tosfot read says that Rabbi Yaakov is actually arguing on Rabbi Abou. And Rabbi Yaakov fundamentally disagrees with Rabbi Abou, who makes this distinction between Hekdesh and Asherah. That Hekdesh, there is less room for maneuverability than there is by Asherah. Rabbi Yaakov comes along to say that the din is the same, both by Ephrochim and by Beitzim. Asherah and Hekdesh have exactly the same din. And therefore, the only way to explain the Braita then would be to say that it was Eitzim that came from somewhere else. And that would force you then go back to the answer that the Eitzim came from somewhere else, and that's what explains the Braita according to Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Now, next Mishnah. Amotzei Kelim, person who finds utensils, Baleim Tzurat Chama, Tzurat Levana, and on them they have images of the sun, images of the moon, Tzurat Arkon, or an image of, again, whether that's a snake, serpent, or a dragon, Yolichem the Yamamelech. You gotta take them straight to Yamamelech. We assume they are problematic that they are Avodah Zarah. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shalom Mechubadim Asurim. If they're on Kelim that are of a certain stature and status, these are beautiful kelim, then you can assume they're for avodah zarah. Shalom mevuzim, if they're on kelim that are not significant in nature, they are mutarim because we assume that they have no association with avodah zarah because they weren't put on an item of significance. Here, the Baal Tosafot ask, motziv kelim valim tzurat darkon, we just saw in the previous Amud that you don't need that the image or the item be on a kli. We saw it in the previous Amud that even the tzurat of darkon in general is problematic, irrespective of whether it's on a kli or not. Telling on the kelim as a chiddush, even though it's not standalone, it's not an image of a dragon by itself, but it's on a kli, they still worship the kli that has the image on it, and that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that you have to still destroy the kelim in this case. Now, Rashi over here on the Mishnah says, Yolichem l'mayam ha-melech, Rabbanan hi de'amrei. That's the position of the Rabbanan. Because the Rabbanan were matir by Tzlamim before in the earlier Mishnah. Those Tzlamim that they say are mutar, that's only in a case where they are Tzlamim that don't have anything in their hand, not holding anything. But here we have an exception to that rule, which is that these images are found on kelim. Here even the Rabbanan agree that they're problematic in terms of avodah zarah. The Baal Tosafot say, Rashi the Shittato doesn't make sense. Rashi said on the Mishnah that before when the Gemara come and said, that is hani mili bandarte. That's only true when we're doing statues of the king. That's the case in the Mishnah. Rashi said that was modifying Rabbi Meir. And the Rebbe Meir is only oser in cases of the statues of the king that are standing at the entrance way to the cities. That's where Rebbe Meir says they are asurim. Otherwise, Rashi says that Rebbe Meir believes that Tzlamim are mutarim. That means that even according to Rebbe Meir, Tzlamim are mutarim. And that's what the Baal Tosafot point out. That Rashi the Shittato should have said that this Mishnah applies not only to the Rabbanan, but even according to Rebbe Meir, who says in general Tzlamim are mutarim. Here he says these images on the kelim are problematic. But then the Perush Rabbeinu Tam, who said that the statements of Andarte were modifying the Rabbonon and not Rabbi Meir. So in that case, everybody agrees, not just Rabbi Meir, but the Chachamim. Everybody agrees that other Tzlamim are Asurim. So then why do you need this Mishnah at all? This Mishnah is telling you that something's Asur where every Tzlam is Asur. So then he says, Tzarech Lamar, Shar Tzlamim, Shein Asurim, Shein Amalek Kelim. What you have to say is that Tzlamim are Asurim, but images that these Tzlamim have on a clay would not be problematic, with the exception of these three. So that's what he said, even though the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir agreed that all Tzlamim are Asurim, with the exception of Andarte, where the Chachamim say that they are Mutarim, according to the Rebbeinu Tam, nevertheless, over here, they're going to say that by any clay that has images on it, those are fine, with the exception of these three. That's how Rabbi Tom's going to have to read the Gemara. The Memra, the Lahaniu, the Palchilu, makes it sound like these three items, or these three images, are what they worship. The Midachrin alone, other items, they do not worship. Viramini, Hashochet, Lushum, Yamim. Person who checks something to the sea. Lushum Narot, to the rivers. Lushum Midbar, to the desert. Lushum Chama, to the sun. Lushum Levana, to the moon. The Shum Kochavim Mizalot, to the stars and the constellations. The Shum Michael Saragadol, to the great angel Michael. The Shum Shilshul Katan, to a little snail or a little worm. Arielu Zimchei Meitim. All of those are considered to be Zimchei Meitim. So you see here that they worship everything. So why should there be only these three images are problematic? Sounds like they worship things across the board. The Rashi over here says when they are worshiping the sea, it is not that they are literally worshiping the sea or the mountains. It's the Sar HaMemuneh Al Harim, saying that the ministering angel of the mountain, the ministering angel of the sea, the ministering angel of the river, not that they're literally worshiping the river itself, the Har itself. Obviously, Rashi had in his Girsa, you can see that in the Bach, that it had the Shum Harim, because we don't have that in our Gemara, and Rashi's quoting that, so that's what the Bach adds in, that they do it the Shum Harim. So the Gemara answer is, Amrabai, Miflach Lachol, the Mishkach Chay Palchay. When it comes to worshiping, they worship anything they can find. Miyatzer umefalche, when they're going to create something and worship it, hani tlatet chashive tzair lehu palchilu, then these three items which are important or significant to them, they will draw or create these images and worship them, but midachrina lenoi baal meavdiu, for anything else, they're just doing it in a decorative way. So when it comes to worshiping, don't worship anything because it doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't mean anything to worship that. Whether you're worshiping the sea, the rivers, or the mountains, none of that costs you anymore or changes anything. If you're shechting, you can check with any of those items. If you're going to go invest in making something into avodah zarah, then that investment that they make, and worship is only with these three images, which are significant. Other images they do decoratively. They don't invest in creating them in order to worship them. Matkit Rav Sheshet, Chomrei Matnita, Betani. So Rav Sheshet used to, according to Rashi, gather together all the Mishnayot, or Tanaic works that were difficult to answer, and then he would try to find answers for them. So that's the way Rashi explains it. Bali Tosafot do not like that explanation. They say they prefer the explanation of his grandson, the Rashbam, that he established general principles or put together a seder in the Braitot, and that comes from the word chomer or kusher, that chumraita means to tie on, or to have a aromatic perfume that is attached around the neck that a person has. That's where the word is used other places in Shas. And that's what it means over here too, that he tied them together. He gathered them together and put them into a seder, or gave understanding to those braitot. Betani, this is the brait that he brought. Kol ha-mazolot mutarim. All of the heavenly bodies, planets, mutarim, chutz mi mazal chama ulevana, with the exception of the chama and levana, the sun and the moon. V'chol partzufim mutarim. All facial images are fine. Chutz mi partzuf adam, with the exception of the image of a human face. V'chol atzurot mutarot. And all images are fine. Chutz mi tzurot darkon, with the exception of the image of the snake, serpent, dragon. So now we're going to discuss this. Amamar. Kol ha-mazulot mutarim. Chutz mi mazal chama ulevana. All of the heavenly bodies are not problematic, with the exception of the sun and the moon. The question about what it means, the sun and the moon over here, because why are those exceptional, or why are those different than anything else? So either you have to say that they were more likely to worship the sun and the moon. Those were things that were central to the life. They saw them every day, and therefore they were considered to be significant enough that they worshiped them. Or the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot over here explains why our Mishnah noted that the serpent, the chaman levana, are significant images, because he says, so throughout the chaman levana, einin yano shimza gul, that you have some sort of circle that represents the sun that's drawn on the kli, v'yomer zehu shemesh, o keshet agul, or you have some sort of semicircle or shape that looks like the moon, v'yomer zeh levana, ela shebalei atzlamim anikrim tlasis. Miyachasim the kochavim tzurot. These talatsis, or astrologers, they assign certain images or pictures to the mazalot. Ad shomrim, tzurat shabtai, tzurat zakein shachor. Elderly individual, or tzurat noga, tzurat nara yafa, bechali zahav. And the one of noga is a nice young lady. Vitzurat shemesh, tzurat melech miutar. And the sun is a king sitting there that has some sort of crown onto his head. Yoshev al-Agala, sitting on a wagon. I think you've probably seen images of this. The sun god, which has a king that is sitting in a wagon that has a crown on his head that looks like the rays of the sun. That is the sun god, and that's what they're speaking about. And Chayim Yachasim, the Cholam Azalot, V'Kochavim, Tzurot Arbet. They have all these different images that they assign to the signs of the zodiac or the constellations. V'hein v'otan tzurot chokim machloket arbe, v'fishayim ma'amarim kozvim. He says that there are many different machlokot about this, because it's all a bunch of myths and lies. V'amru tzurat chama ulevana, tzolamar shimtza tzuram yucheset el ha-shemes, v'atzuram yucheset el ha-levana o'ezudat shiyeh. So that when we're speaking about images over here, we're not speaking about just drawing a sun or drawing a moon. We're dealing with a moon or a sun that contains within them some sort of picture that gives you the image of the god of the sun. The image that they assign to the sun, that's where it's problematic. Not just when you draw a sun or you draw a moon. So that's very different than we would have assumed based on what the Mishnah says. The Rambam over here says that we're not just speaking about plain images. We're speaking about images that have a certain meaning to these individuals who worship the sun and worship the moon. Therefore, it's not a sun that includes the sun god or the ministering angel of the sun, whatever it is. And he says they're all a bunch of myths anyway. But what if they do that? That's what the Gemara is speaking about, not just a plain sun or a plain moon. Others simply say that it is the image of the sun or the image of the moon, because those were common types of Avodah Zarah. If you see it, that's already an indication that they were dedicated to that Avodah Zarah. So now, the Gemara says, why is the sun and the moon problematic? If it's that he formed them, he created them, if it's they're making these images, then why are any of these images okay? It says, do not make with me, or Pasuk Spim, and other gods. Now they make other gods. The Gemara parses the Pasuk to read, Lotasuniti. Don't make things that are with me up in the heavens. Don't make the constellations. So that would apply to any constellation, not just the sun and the moon. And these restrictions seem to apply even if it's not done the Avodah Zarah. And that's why the Gemara is not bringing the Pesukim that clearly indicate that Avodah Zarah, the images in the heavens and down on the earth, are all problematic. That's because they were made the Avodah Zarah. Here we're just speaking about making these images, period. And that's why they're bringing different sources in the Pesukim to that fact. Ela pshita b'motzei. Must be that he found the utensils with these on them. We could deny. Like we have in our Mishnah, motzi kelim aleim surat chamat surat levanat surat darakon yolichem liyam amelech. Even motzei, if you say he just found the images, ema mitziyoto. What are you going to do with the middle part of the brayta that we brought from Rav Sheshet, which was kol partzufot mutarim? All faces or images of faces are fine. Chutz mi partzuf adam, the exception of the face of a man. Even motzei partzuf adam yasur. You find something with an image of a face of a man on it, why is that problematic? That's none. So there you see that that's what goes to the Yam HaMelech when you find these images. Surat Darkon in, Partsuf Adam lo. You're dealing with an image of an individual, that's fine. It's only the Surat Darkon of the dragon, the serpent, or the snake that's problematic. El Pshita Boset. Must be that you're making it. Uchad Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua. And like Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua says, which is that he explains that lotasun iti is not iti, but rather lotasun oti. You may not make an image of me. You may not make an image of God. And that's what the problem is, that you can't make a partsuf adam, because that's lotasun oti. Do not replicate me. We are created in tselem elukim. And if then you make the face of man, that's like the equivalent of making oti. And that's what the problematic is. Ibo seh. Now if you tell me it's about making it, Ema Sefer, what do you do with the last part of the Brayta that Rav Sheshet brought? Kol Atzurot Mutarot, Chut Mitzurot Darkon. All images are fine with the exception of the image of a Darkon. Ibo Seh, Surat Darkon Mi Asir. If you're making an image of a dragon, who says that's a sur? Baktiv, Lo Tasuni Ti Elohei Chesef Elohei Zahav, Hani In, Surat Darkon Lo. It's just making images in gold and silver that are problematic, but not making an image of a dragon. That in itself is not problematic. Elapshita b'motzei. That must be a case in the latter part where he finds them. Uchnan, and like our Mishnah, the motzei kelim aleim surat chama levana and the darkon. That's what's problematic. So now he turns out reishav sefer b'motzei. The brayta in the first case where it's speaking about kol hamazalot, that has to be a case where you found it. The case where it speaks about kol hatzurot, that's also a case where it has to be you found it. Mitziata b'motzei. The middle case about partzufim is only a case where you're actually making it. Because if you found it, it wouldn't be a problem. Amar Abaya in. That's right. Reisha v'seifa b'motzei. U'mitziyata b'osei. That's how you have to explain the breita. V'rova amar kula b'motzei. The entire breita is a case where he found it. U'mitziyata Rabbi Yehuda in. And the middle case is Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the image of a man's face is problematic. The Tani Rabbi Yehuda mosif af dmut menika v'sarapis. And he adds on that there are other images that are problematic. And that is an image of a nursing woman and an image of Sarafis, Menika Hashem Chava Sheminika Kol Olam Kula, that the image of a nursing mother is like that of Chava, which is she nursed the whole world. Sarafis Hashem Yosef Shesar Umepis Et Kol Olam Kula. So Rashi translates the word Sar to mean Sar, like made into a minister or someone of royalty or power. And then he reads afis, coming from the word the hapis, that someone who satisfies or provides for others, provided for everybody during the time period of the famine. But the Rashbam, on the other hand, says that the lashon sar means to check out or to look into. Sar Efes means check out, that there's nothing left. There's no more money or there's no more grain left in Mitzrayim. And that's how the references back to Yosef. But oh, the Naki Griva, it's only if he's holding a measure in his hand. The Kakayo, and he is actually measuring. He the Nakta Ben, the Kamenika. And by the woman, it's only if she has a child that she is nursing. So it's not just a nursing mother. And it's not just Yosef, but it's Yosef with a measuring cup, dishing out or giving out that which is measured, meaning that he's giving sustenance. Similarly, the woman who's nursing the child, indication of giving sustenance, which are generally associated with the Egyptian gods Osiris and Isis, the Greek names for these Egyptian gods. So they would see this as Minika, a nursing woman, and Yosef, who is the Mechalkel, the one who provided sustenance. Both of those images are images of providing sustenance or what the needs of the individual are. And that's why he sees them as being images that they worship. Again, both of these, we said before, associated with the Egyptian gods, but it seems that they derived from personalities that were not problematic, including Chava and Yosef, and then they were later repositioned or made into these gods as time went on, and they lost the original connection to what the original purpose or idea behind these images were, much like we saw earlier in the Masechta, the ideas of the holidays of Adam and Rishon that then were converted into pagan holidays later on. Those are problematic, and Rabbi Yehuda will be the author of the Braita who says that images of man are problematic even when you find them, which is the only problem we thought was lo tasun oti. Don't make me, don't make an image of man. That's problematic. That we could explain why man is different than others. On the other hand, when it comes to finding them, an image of a man would not have been problematic. But for Rabbi Yehuda, who says that there are certain images beyond Levana, Chama, and Darkon, that is also these two other images that are problematic, and those are human images. And that will be the explanation of that middle part of the Braita. The Meiri, just in summary, notes that there are three different things over here. You have something called Mazal, then you have a Partsuf, and then you have a Tzurah. So Mazalot are things that are in the heavenly constellations, the heavenly bodies. Partsufim are faces, but faces of animals or human beings where their face or their head is higher than their body. That's called a Partsuf. A Tzurah is an animal or an object where it doesn't have that. The face is not above the level of the rest of the body. And therefore, those are called tzurot, or images. So that's how he defines or he classifies the three different categories. While others just say simply, the difference between a partsuf and a tzurah is things that have faces, then it's called a partsuf. Things that don't have a face, then it's called a tzurah. And you can see that in Rashi, where Rashi says, v'dagim lo kari partsuf el tzurah. When it comes to fish, they're known as a tzurah and not as a partsuf. And with that, we'll end by the two dots on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph.